Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Genius Groove Theory. Tonight on it's Freestyle Friday night. We had to kind of do a little twist, but we're back in studio once again. This is Freestyle Friday night on Genius Groove Theory, and we're having an open mic night. We got Bishop Brett Molyneux here from La Habra, California, my brother. To those of you who know him, he's sitting down here on the couch speaking freely about everything from raising boys to be men and the role that men play in young boys' lives. And we'll be taking calls to hear what everyone has to say about this issue. So with that, with much more further ado, I'm going to go ahead and play that cut that I was telling you about. Did you get a chance to listen to it the first time? Or are you going to hear it again? I just messed up. We've been cutting up all day. I love my brother. It's Friday night. Today is September 9th, 2016. And we're chilling here. We're going to be on about an hour or so. We're just going to freestyle everything and take it as it comes. So we're going to go ahead and take you out with what I think is going to be my new intro to the show, The Unniggering a Nation. This shout goes out to Derek D. Brown, Dammit Boy Brown, and his girl Nita out there in Atlanta. I believe, yeah, they're in Atlanta, Georgia. They sent their music in to me to play free of charge, because everybody out there knows there's no transfers of revenues when it comes to playing your music and so forth. You just send me in your music and I'll play it. There's no fees or anything that I'm charging or any extra, just that I'm sharing with the community all around the world your style of music. That's all we can do. So here we go. Without much more ado, here's Unniggering a Nation on Genius Groove Theory.
This is the beginning of a process where we are unniggering ourselves. The foundation of where we will no longer be looked upon as just figures or statistics that can be marketed as a fad or never but ever changing trend. Those that categorize us as such will begin to witness the becoming of black people, the process where we are unniggering ourselves. And with it, away goes ignorance to have diligence. It is just instead of wanting to take away from others when there's so much more to have and earning. Well, we start to pay attention to the little details that's within the big picture, that's the side of a photo album where everybody has at least one picture. Unniggering ourselves means that even if you are behind my back, I'm still not going to harm you, because you only harming yourself. Unniggering ourselves means that they ain't worried about just me, but all of us, because we banding together, so we can get out together. Unclassifying ourselves as more than just a useful profit to the profit. That's keeping us against each other anyway, because I hate you for what you wear or where you live or what you drive or who your folks is or where you go to school at and this and that and that and this and that was this before that became this. And when that hit this, we all got that this is a bad situation that happened to this. Cause now that got this in jail while this, that, and those are dead as hell. This process of unniggerization means that if we have enough of the nation's population having better communications on prospering with better situations while still relating to our setbacks, our trials, and our tribulations, then a nigger in the mind frame means that we maintain on teaching each child the training of home, community, and life. And as every race studies us, we need to study them and study us. So as we unnigger ourselves, we'll have a sturdy us. Seeming to how they want to be us. So nigger rush, but just don't seem to have that nigger touch. So say if we take notes and put that nigger touch to it, then a nigger in ourselves is to do away with our niggerish ways of how we see and treat each other and ourselves in a negative way. Hey, follow my Twitter signs out there of my nigger in ourselves. Let's see how far this can go. Look at it like this. We help build they shit. So let's build ours. A nigger in ourselves means to agree to disagree. and still get it done. And it's on to the next one. Cause it's so much more that we can do much better. The niggering process means that I'm not worried about your chubby, but what has got you fed up? Be that ill when you want to fess up, that end of the rope when you want to catch up. Cause mountaintops is where we head up. But see, here's the question. If we a nigga ourselves, who can stop us?
Hey, you guys, you're back to Gina's Groove Theory. This is Freestyle Friday night, open mic night. We're only doing an hour show tonight. I'm sitting in, like I said, we're freestyling here in Gina's Groove Theory. And we're having this open mic night with Bishop Brett Molyneux out of La Habra, California, which you guys know. A lot of you guys know him from the show, from that episode, What We As Women Should Know. Yes, he's the Bishop Brett, and he's joining me here sitting in the living room, and we've been doing a lot of talking and hanging out the past couple of few days, and we're a brother and sister team, so we're teaming it up tonight once again like we always have in the past. We're going to be talking about freely talking about from raising boys to being men and the role that a man plays in the young man's life. And taking calls to hear from you guys out there, because in between me and Bishop Brett talking, I'm going to be going and touching in and seeing who's out there, who's out and about, because I didn't get a chance to promote this as much as I would have wanted to, so I don't know who's out there listening in. I give much love and dap and admiration to all of you guys out there who's been downloading and archiving the show. She's looking really good in the past 7 days. I'm at 194, and that's really good, being that I've only done, it's going to be my third, episode 93. We're going to call it a baby episode. That's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it a baby episode. I got you in. Yeah, it was me on my end. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, Bishop Brett is learning how I run this studio and how everything works, so he's out here joining me. I'm going to go ahead and let him say hello. Hello, Bishop Brett. You can go ahead and join on in.
Hello. How you doing out there?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're good.
Okay.
Hi. Well, Bishop Brett, we're talking about the rearing of children and young men, raising young men into becoming prosperous and good men and being a good role model to the boys out there. Being that we are from a single parent home, we had a mom, just a mom, and he was brought up pretty much around women. He lived in a totally structured woman's monarch, you could say. And then here comes me. You know, you had my mom, you had my grandmother, you had my grandmother's sister. And all three women were over him on a constant basis. We had to go to private school. We had a great life because, you know, our mother had, she came in on the era of JFK. She was hired at Alpha Beta, which a lot of you people out here know in California used to be Alpha Beta Alphys, or the same situation. Well, she was hired in 1962. And from there, she was a Teamster Local 952 out of Orange County. And, you know, they believed in education. She went to a Catholic, all-girls Catholic school out in Los Angeles, California. He went to St. John Bosco, and I at Virginia Chelley Center. Shout out there to all my girls out there I went to school with, knowing that I was who I was, and he's who made me who I am. But he has also set the pace from coming from us being in a single family home. Yeah, I mean, and just with the mother, and it was very difficult for him to have to take the instruction of a mother on a date, you know, of all women, and then here comes me, and so I just added on to your problems, right, Brett?
Yeah, pretty much.
At that point.
You're doing a good job. Keep on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to accept, you know, what I did do. You know, to me, you have set the pace. We went back and forth about this issue too, because my brother, he said he's willing to to feel the need to say, you know, he's going to bring it to you guys about what he feels about rearing young men, and as a mother who raised him and had difficulty with him, he's going to shoot it to you from the hip, you guys. All of the views of the radio station does not apply to fast, but we're just throw that out there, just in case. But yeah, go ahead, Brett. Go ahead and give him a little brief on.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say how's everybody doing this afternoon, and I'd like to give the mothers, the single mothers, a hand, because it's hard. And I have complete empathy for them, because, you know, it's just hard. I like to give all the deadbeat dads no hand at all, because they should have been home, and they should have been with their wives or their girlfriend, whatever they did to have these kids, they should have been there. And when I see these people running away from kids, you know, I can't do anything but look down on them, because, you know, they don't know what they're missing. They don't know, you know, anything about child, and really it's horrible, because my dad, he wasn't there for me. He wasn't there for me at all. My mom was there for me the whole time, but it takes a little bit more than mom sometimes, you know, to develop a young man. And my mom, she was top of the line. I love my mom, but you know, on the other end of it all, you know, I needed that male role model. And in this thing, you know, a whole bunch happened to me in my life that short-circuited me. And that's what people have to know. And the reason I know is I compare my kid's life to the way I grew up. See, my kid's life from the very beginning. And I look at all the things that could have been avoided if I would have had that dad there. But I didn't have that dad there. So I had a mom that tried to fill in all the lines and all the dots. She tried to make everything work. And it was hard for her. If I was young and I didn't understand what she was going through mentally and physically trying to raise a young man. I would tell you, I sent her through it. And I rebelled. I had hypertension. Started smoking at 7.
Having sex at seven.
Driving at 8.
7.
I mean, everything you can name, you know.
Well,
been there, seen that, done that.
Well, just to send that out, though, Brett, because we have to go ahead and recommend now. You know, I don't really call them deadbeats, you know, because we both didn't have a dad. But then also, too, you have to realize today's era has brought out not just deadbeat dads, the deadbeat moms, you know. So, I mean, the world has changed considerably. And we're not going to even call them deadbeats. This is what we're going to say. We're going to say that they've had struggles. Because, see, a lot of the young people who are having kids now are young. And, you know, mom, being that she was 27 when she had you, she was 32 when she had me, she was like kind of, you know, conditioned and seasoned. She said herself that she chose to have children at the age that she did was because she had already did all her partying. But now when you look at it, you know, when a young mother was young and she had a husband back in the day, now we have young children, you know, young kids, you know, 14, 15 years old. You're fortunate not to have had any, but 14 to 15 year it is the rearing, don't get me wrong, but neither, you know, I had my first child at 18. These kids are having kids, they have 3 kids by the age of 18. You know, that's the reality. So really we won't just say the daddy, we're just that a lot of them are just immature. And what do you get when you give a baby?
Well, you know, I'm sorry, you know, me, I got to tell it like it is. You know, I have no problem with deadbeat moms and deadbeat dads, because you know what? It all affects the children. You know, somebody's got to think about the children. You know, if two people don't get together and they're going to have sex, let them be responsible. They're responsible enough to have the sex. Let them be responsible enough to raise them. because we got a whole society of kids out here running wild, doing and saying anything, acting like grown folks. You know, when I was young, I remember there used to be a time when you couldn't even talk or listen to grown folks talk when they were sitting around the table, and you get your head knocked off. Now you got kids, you can't listen to them while they're going to tell you off.
Well,
everything's messed up. Everything's messed up. You know, it's not fair to these mothers. And it's not fair to the fathers that have these people running off. You know, instead of having all these other child support laws, maybe they should have a runoff law.
Well, you know, the child support law is strictly to, we don't even want to get into that topic because we already know what the child support whole situation is. It's only the news, a certain, you know, we don't even want to start with that. But yeah, in consideration to, you know, being that they're young and you remember we didn't really listen to what we were told. You know, mama could still, you know, she could scare the hell out of me. You know, I mean, but still, I ended up pregnant at 18 or 17. So, Casey, she's too much caring in the house. So, you know, with these kids now, with 911, I'm going to talk about this. Yeah, to do drugs, you know. We don't want to talk about what I can do with my kids in elementary, coming in lighting the joint and letting them smell it and say, if you smell, and sit in front of all of us. And potentially, I think, what, second and first and second grade? And said, if you smell this in your house, you call. Now, little alone, would you want to call and tell somebody
let me tell you
what
something.
You smell in your mama's house?
Let me tell you something. They did that to me. Don't tell my kids. If they threaten you or if they come at you or I handed them the phone and told them to call.
Well, I did the same thing too.
And the police came and you know what he said? The police said, "You're a good dad. We ought to beat them too."
Well,
the police are tired too. They're all tired. They're tired of dealing with it.
In a sense, the police could be tired, but they're probably tired of whooping on them, but they're not tired of shooting them. I can say.
Oh
that.
Yeah, we could tell. Can't we now?
Tell. You know, they've come to find that common place. You know, and this is a point we want to make too. You know, we want to send a shout out there for that main thing, is that see when we don't rear our children, when we don't rear them now just. My brother's gonna say, in retrospect, he's saying for you dads, and as a pastor, I know what he's trying to say to you guys, you know. But then that's saying that to you, to the young women too. But also, you know, with all that being said, though, we have to start rearing. You know, I mean, we have to start teaching the kids from when they're little, though, Brett. I mean, we didn't have, you know, there ain't no parent book or no way to raise children. There's not a correct way to raise children, and there was no children rearing books and parenting and all that. So with that, you know, you start off. I remember when I had, you know, my first kid. I really didn't know much about anything, and I talk a lot about it. I was unskilled. I made a lot of bad choices. But then again, you're thinking about these younger kids who they're not even sticking around because they don't even know how important I guess it goes back to the old saying that, you know, anybody could be a mother. Anybody could be a father.
But it goes right back, Gina. It goes right back to that parent that ran off from them kids. That parent didn't have a father either. So he don't know how to be a father. You need to understand.
Well, you know, but you have,
if the father would
have
been
father,
there to teach
sure?
the son. Yeah, but it was hard. I mean, look at how much trouble look at how much I done, how much destruction I done before I got responsible. You see, I'm gonna tell it like it is. I ain't gonna be faking the chicken. I'm gonna tell it like it is. I used women and ran around and did all kind of dirt and just lollygagged and lied and do anything to mess somebody's life up.
Wow.
Then when I grew up and became a big boy, I understood what I had to do. Thank God that I grew up, because I would be one of these deadbeat dads too. But I had to realize I had to look back at my dad. When I looked back at my dad, I said, I don't want to be nothing like him.
Well, see how the negative effects directed you to be a better dad. You have to look at it like. your negative effects made you who you are today, which made you a better person and a better dad for your kids. So what is it that, because I mean, I want to know too, what is it that, what was your makeup to, what was it that made you change? What made you want to make the difference? You know, we were brought up without a dad. And our mother was kind of like, she was like a man.
I'll tell you. Since we have very limited time, I'm going to run it through. Well, I hadn't seen my dad. I saw my dad when I was 2.5 years old. He came to the house. I remember it. That's how much I think about it. He was 2 years old. He whooped me to find out who my mom was seeing. And he stole my mom's rent money. It was $295. And he stole the money and whooped me again and told me not to tell. Next time I saw him, I was 27 years old. I met him at our family's, we own some cleaners. I met him at our family's cleaners, and it was me and my wife, and I was taking her out. We was down to Santa Monica. I wanted him to meet his grandchildren. By that time, I had 6 children. They kept asking about the grandfather. I said, well, he wasn't a dad to me. At least I'll let them see their grandfather, you know, trying to give him a break, you know. And I'm sitting there in front of the cleaners. My wife, I have a beautiful wife, just sitting there with me. And we're looking, and here comes this guy coming down the street pushing a basket. And my wife, she's kind of snooty. So she started giggling. She said, look at this guy.
Shout out there to my sister-in-law.
She said, look at this guy. Look at this guy, you know. She said, what if that's your dad? And I automatically got offensive. I said, my dad, because my dad, by trade, he's a pharmacist. And he's a pharmacist and a butcher. And as he got closer, I looked at him, and I said, no, that couldn't be my dad. Sure enough, that was my dad. And I just wanted him to see his grandchildren. I didn't want anything from him. I'm pretty successful. And this guy, he automatically gets offensive with me. He said, I ain't got nothing. I don't have anything. I don't know what you're looking for me for. And so back then, I was kind of crazy. I told him, I said, you know what? Let me tell you something. I just want you to see your grandchildren before you die. And he looked at me like, what grandchildren? And I said, oh, you're just going to take it on all the way through the whole family tree, right? You're just going to deny all of us, right? And so that was the last time I saw him. The next thing, the next time I heard from him was the family calling me. Now, this is how people are. The family called me after this guy wasn't in my life. Because he died up in Vegas, they wanted me to bury him.
Oh, they wanted you to preside over his funeral, right?
Yes. No, they didn't want me to preside. They wanted me to pay for it.
Okay. Well.
They wanted me to fly his body back from Vegas and pay for this. Everything. Now, out of 15 people, they came with $100.
Wow. Well, I guess, I can remember that part very, very clearly because I was there and I remember, about it, because you came and you told Mom about it. I was there. Yeah, you told her everything about it and I remember so clearly because I guess, being it that she was she was the one who was there for us the whole time. I guess she got a little bit
hurt,
and she was like, "Yeah, she did." She was like, well, "I guess you want to go see your daddy next. You can go find your daddy." I was like, "Oh yeah, I ain't looking for him."
She was serious.
So with that, I look at me and Dominic, shout out there to my sister way since you did, you know, throw her out there and, you know, she's around about at home. And as well as my two children, Cortez and Dominique as well. Cortez's birthday is tomorrow. I hope he's doing all right. I think I did a pretty good job being a single mother. But to the fact that I guess my kids are probably scared them, you know, probably like us a little bit, because you've been since you was 14.
Well, you know what? A lot of parents, the thing about two parents is that one has to go to work. While the ones at work, we were like stair-stepped, because I'm working graveyard shift. So basically, we raised ourselves at one point.
So you pretty much raised me. Come on.
I'm just saying, so you got to. I know, because right now, with two parents, my wife stays at home and she watches the kids. And when I come home from work, I watch the kids, give her some air. You know, and we are able to catch them in the dirt. Now, people don't understand that kids are really smart. And I know because I'm like a detective. I'm on them kids like right. I catch the boys, I catch them all. Now I don't find everything they do, but I block a lot of it. Then they know when dad's home, they don't pull that junk. And they know they're not going to talk back to me. They're not going to give me no lip.
Do you think that's because? Because you didn't really give mama no lip.
No, I didn't give my mom. I didn't talk back to my mom, no.
So I might, I'm kind of diagnosing this, right? I'm more likely to say that it all depends on the mother. And she didn't give her mama. Well, you know, one thing I took from my mom.
My mom, she never held stuff against you. She never held stuff against you. She wasn't one of the ones beat you in the head talking about remember when you did and all that. She never did. And I don't do that to my kids. I don't keep harmonizing on the same old stuff, you know.
On a serious, there are some ladies out there like that too, where you if the child looks like that. Was that a mosquito?
Oh, we have another guest in the studio.
Yeah, I'm going to sit by you. I need typhoid like another thing in here.
Yes, Brett, my brother Brett. Yes. He survived a life-sustaining injury to his head and his neck. And he's really blessed with his halo off out here in Long Beach, coming out here to check me. He's truly blessed to be alive today. But I have to say that I'm going to go and get the mosquito. I have to say that it may be the mother, the single parent in the home that is making the difference. Because the only reason I say that is because our mother didn't do anything. She didn't play that. She didn't play with you. She didn't tapples with you about anything. She was just straightforward with it. And I'm thinking it may be the parent at home, not the absent parent, the present parent. That makes the difference. Why is freestyling the show? And since no one has called in yet to be on, and I can't tell who's out there and who's not, we're going to go ahead and take a 2-2, since it is like right at the hour, at the half hour. We're going to go ahead and play, let's see, we have several, something that give you a little bit of time, because I know most of you guys out there haven't even taken a deep breath yet. So we're going to go ahead and play So Infatuated. This song was given to me by Derek Brown, Damn It Boy Brown, and his girl Nita. We want to send a shout out there to her and him for sending me in some tracks to to grow with and to send out there to you guys, to independent artists out there too. I've been in communications with a lot of you guys. I have your names, and I'm getting your contact numbers as well, your names, addresses, and your music. I need full permission because Blog Talk has changed so considerably that everything is totally different when it comes to your music. I have to have permissions, you know, ever since Marvin Gaye. Boy, I tell you, it's been quite rough out here because you can't play anybody's uncopywritten music these days, and that has been quite something to have to bear with. But with all of you guys who are sending in your independent artist music, I will play it. I have no other reasons but to, Well, you know what? But I was gonna go ahead and
play Bumpy Music.
Play another.
Well, go ahead because I'm gonna finish talking though because you know this is very important. This is important, you know, just thank God we got mothers that raise the children and stick with them, and we got fathers that raise the children and stick with them. You know, I just my heart really goes out, and really, I think I'm gonna start a program. Something to help these mothers and help these fathers out, okay?
Well, you know what? I think that'd be really good.
I think I will, but I want to do it in a large, large arena.
Hey, I got this 501c3 coming, and it's taking up everything for.
Yeah, because we got to do a change because we got to help them help themselves. Amen.
Amen. But whatever we implement, and this is what I've been really talking to people and I've been expressing, that we start very young. That means we're going to have to really start with the young parents
who are young children.
So it's going to be something we're going to take a listen to. We're upon the hour, and we're going to go ahead and take a listen to Derrick Brown. Like I said before, my big brother came back in to say hi. This is actually, it's called So Infatuated. It'll give him a little bit of time to go grab him something to drink and me as well. And we'll be back 2 and 2. This is a shout out to Dammit D. Brown, Dammit Boy D. Brown, and his girl Nita. This is on Genius Groove Theory, right here in Long Beach, California.
Yeah. It's Damn It Boy. Don't wanna know the Damn It Boy.
Yo, this is my story.
About somebody you gotta work for.
Know what I'm saying? Check.
I said I'm infatuated. I'm so infatuated.
Yeah.
She know that I want it bad, but she keep on hesitating. When it's gonna go down, it's gonna seem like this the greatest, but she killing me with this anticipation, cause she knowing that I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I just wanna
be too.
Damn it, I'm a
be too.
When we first locked eyes, I knew it would be on.
That's right.
She said she wants somebody that can make her moan.
Yes,
she's saying this to me because she wants me to volunteer.
I will.
My service isn't down, so I can make her concentrate.
I will.
Take her away from here, we fall to a better place.
Come
she wants a pleasure trip because she heard about this place.
Come
she said there is no rush, we can take our time. She wants me to put my hands on her and touch her on her
mind.
Make her lose her mind and forget about her tension that she got in her life, cause all she wants to mention
what?
Is how good I got her feeling, higher than the ceiling. We just chilling, just she ready for me to give that love for feeling. Because it's gon' feel better than a one night stand.
That's right.
And it only get better cause the trip only begins. We can do whatever, we can keep it like it is. Now come on baby girl, let me handle my business. Because I'm infatuated, I'm so infatuated.
Yeah.
She know that I want it bad, but she keep on
hesitating.
When it's gonna go down, it's gonna seem like this the greatest, but she killing me with this anticipation, cause she knowing that I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I really, 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 really wanna
be too.
I just wanna
be too.
Damn it, I'ma
be too.
Now when
just us two. We done snuck off in the cut. I'm walking slower than her, cause I love to see her strut. She stops and looks at me like she wanna give me a kiss. She saying, show me something, baby, show me what I miss. Give me all you got, like this your last shot. Show me you know how to make this cherry pop. So I took her by her waistline and I go see the kiss her. Lifting up her just thinking about where I'm gonna lick her. Then she snapped my handbag and she started yelling, hold up. Damn, I was in my room and she started yelling, hold up. She saying, I'm not scared, I'm still wanting you to do it. We just need a better time and a better place to prove it, cause it's gon' feel better than a one-night stand. And it only get better cause the trip only begin. We can do whatever, we can keep it like it is. Now come on baby girl, let me handle my biz. Because I'm infatuated, I'm so infatuated. She know that I want it bad, but she keep on hesitating. When it's gonna go down, it's gonna seem like this the greatest. But she killing me with this anticipation, cause she knowing that I really, 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 really wanna get to.
Genius Groove Theory. This is Freestyle Fridays, open mic night, and we're here with Bishop Brett. We're talking about the rearing of boys, young boys to men, and he had several things. We were only doing an hour show tonight simply because we were talking some things over, and since we were talking and speaking of, you know, our situation where we as coming from a single parent family home, that he endeavored, and what kind of made him be a little different with his children, being that he's a father of 12. He wanted to share with you guys to make sure that you guys kind of understood where he's coming from. Yes, he's a little bit rough, a little harsh sometimes. And since we're under about 20 more minutes before we end the show, I'm going to go ahead and let him appeal to you. And don't kill him, Hammer. Don't kill him. Just keep it sweet.
Well, you know, I don't mean to be, you know, I don't mean to be blunt and all that. I just, you know, it's really frustrating because it's a situation that really bothers me, you know, because we sit here and we just sit back and watch from the outside while these mothers and dads are fighting with these children and the single parents, and it doesn't have to be. All it needs is somebody to change it and somebody to care enough to change it, or somebody to speak into people So they change, and nobody wants that job. Everybody makes it seem like it's normal for a single parent. It's not normal. It's just not normal. You know, all it takes is us to be educated and know that sex equals a child. And if you don't have the sex, you won't get the child, or at least wear some protection or something. And so you don't have to bring the poor child into a situation where the child gets hurt. The child is always getting hurt. I mean, you know what? The grown-ups might bicker, and they might be uncomfortable, and they might go through it, but the child is the one that has to live with it. He has to live with that burden of okay, he's at the football game and he's getting ready to go out on the field, and everybody else's dad out there, and his dad ain't there. He's looking up and his dad ain't there. That's gonna throw him off right there. He's like, oh, I don't have one. Now you got depression. Now he's depressed.
Did you have those issues?
I had those issues. Yes, I did. I had a bunch of issues.
Did it ever bother you?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. When the family picnic, you know, everybody else running with the sack race with the dad. I didn't have nobody to run with. Huh? I had to put both my feet in the sack and run by myself. Yeah.
But you had a birthday party every year.
I had some of the best birthday parties on earth due to my mom. My dad didn't have anything to do with it.
You're looking for your dad. No, I'm just
well, my mom did whip it up, though. Come, we going to give her props, right?
You sure didn't look like you was missing those.
Well, them days, I think about dad. Mom covered it up real good. I would appreciate it if my dad was there. You know,
that did bother you.
I mean, even during school, you know, they diagnosed me with hypertension, and they diagnosed me with what's that one with ADH. And this is before ADH was even known. They said, oh, attention deficit
disorder. Yeah.
All that, and then they gave me a IQ of 173. So I was really confused. I'm smart, but then I'm crazy. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then my mom took me to all sorts of different USC reading class and all this other stuff at a young age, you know. And
what was the first time you thought about your dad? I kind of do the interview.
I thought about him at times when I had situations. And I had situations that I needed to talk to a man.
How old were you? I'm saying. How old were you when you first?
I'm going to say 12. 12. 12. I needed him when I was 12. Because that was a critical part of my life. You know that was a turning point. You know, everything had went so fast in my life. You know, I mean, I grew up too fast. You know, and growing up fast. You know, not to mention the molestation. I didn't throw that in. You know, from the babysitter women.
Whoa.
You know, two different ones at seven, and seven and eight, and it was just it's just a bad setup. It's just bad. All that followed me as I grew up. You know, I mean, you know, a young boy, just to be honest, a young boy, we don't call it molestation. You know, we all happy, you know.
Oh, no, nowadays they don't call it molestation.
No, back then it was, you know, it was thrown under the rug.
Right.
But because I told mom, I got beat. Yeah, I got beat. I got beat when I told my mom.
Really?
Yeah. And she told me I was lying. And then that's why I tried to set the babysitter on fire.
Oh, that's when I was nine.
When you was nine, that's when you start walking.
Because I got a book.
Because you got book. Yeah, you got book trying to save me. And you start walking.
That's the best one of those.
She hit you with that switch and you ran across the floor. Yeah. So, you know.
Protecting my brother.
It was hard. It was hard for her. You know?
Did you feel that, I mean, growing up today, we're 6 years apart. Do you feel that, I'm just asking because, I mean, I would imagine that people would want to know. You feel like you were, like, a, you know, you had to, because you were always protective. You know, you beat anybody up for me. I mean, anybody, So did you feel like you had to be, like, step up? Did you ever feel like...
I had to step in that father's shoes?
Yeah.
Well, I had to... Well, I felt like mom persecuted me for what my father did.
Really?
Yeah, I felt there was a point in my life where she said, look at you. Why don't you go stay with your dad? You know, she got frustrated. And a lot of, a lot of what she went through she targeted at me because she had that hate for a man. It wasn't me personally.
She shot at your dad too?
No, she didn't shoot at him. She hit that man with a belt. She shot at your dad. She didn't shoot at him. She hit him with a belt.
Well, I'm just letting the people out there know our mama wasn't no joke. Okay, she was no joke. Okay, that's basically it. Well, did you feel like you had to step into the role to protect?
No, I had. Well, personally, all my life I felt. I mean, back then, until I grew up and matured, I felt like I had to fight for my manhood. And that's you have to understand what I'm saying, because that can go a bunch of ways. So I'm gonna make it clear. I had to fight to understand what a man was about. Because there was no booklet, there was no internet, there was no easy way to figure it out. And
there was no Google.
Right. And then me being in private school, dealing with all these different, you know, I was in all boys school, so I'm dealing with 100,000 different personalities. I couldn't even deal with the priests because some of them were feminine, and some were they were mixed up themselves. And I picked that up at an early age. So I held it in, and I self-taught myself. And you know, when you self-teach yourself, you make mistakes. And I made a lot of mistakes. I just thank the Lord I got a good woman, because my woman, she helped me and pushed me through. She helped me develop.
Mm, that's a good thing.
She helped me develop. And I give it to her this day, because I was a good person. Okay, but I had I had too much to test. I was like a monster, and I didn't think it was nothing to it. But when I sit down and I really done some soul searching, I was out of control. And so when I figured that out, my wife came to me. I tell you, she came to me and she said, "You got some decisions to make." I'll never forget it. She looked dead in my eyes and she said, "Brad, I love you with all my heart, but you know what? It's gonna have to be our way or your way." And when she said that to me, something triggered inside of me. And I just looked at her and I just let what was in me flow. For the first time, I cried. For the first time. And I cried. I cried. I told her, you know, I'm going to have to trust you. Because I had that thing against the women because of what the women did.
Yeah, because they reared you.
Yeah.
So let's say, you know, I'm figuring out ways that you could be helpful. What can we send? Because we have, we're just under barely 9 minutes to go. Or actually, we're going to send a song. We're going to send it out with the Unniggering a Nation. But we barely have like maybe 5 minutes.
Well, I can sum it up.
Okay, I mean, what can you, because there are a lot of single parents out there right now who are in just, you know, not really in good communications with the parent, the other parent, mm-hmm. the other parent. What is it that you can say? Yeah, I need you to sum it up because we're going to take it out. Sum it up, please. What is it that you can say to be able to?
Okay, for the parents. For the married folk and for the folks that were in bad relationships, sometimes we have to stop thinking of ourselves. We have to start thinking of our children. We have to put our children ahead of us. You see, it's not about us. Once you put a child in the world, it's about you rearing that child. And you have to put that child first. Now, don't get me wrong. The Bible says that a wife and a husband comes first, and then the children. But then on the other hand of it all, you guys are the ones who set the role model. You guys are the ones that got together and had these children. The children didn't have you. So you have to stick in there and make it work. You don't have to be together to make it work. If you can't get along with your mate, fine, that's fine. But at least be there for your children. Come see them. Don't treat them like luggage. Treat them with love. Hold them. Kiss them. Tell them I'm there for you. You know, it would make the whole situation easier on both parents. You know, because later on, what happens later on for you abandoned people, the ones that abandoned their family, the guilt's going to eat you up. Like I said, if you remember what I said earlier about my father, he was a pharmacist, a successful pharmacist, and he was a butcher. But when I saw him that day at 27, when I was 27, he was a bum. It eats you up. It eats you up. The Bible says that you will, if you abandon your wife, if you abandon your family, you become a vagabond. A vagabond in the old days means a bum. So that's just the way it is. And people better realize, because these kids are getting worse and worse and worse, and these parents are doing just the most. They don't. They let the kids tell them what to do. There's no structure in the family. Now, I raised 15 in my house. I have 12 of my own. I took on a few other ones. I didn't go. I wanted to run. I ain't gonna lie. Sometimes I wanted to run up out of there screaming.
How do you make? What? Because we had like maybe a couple of minutes. What can you shoot at home to tell them? Tell them how they can work as single parents with the other parent. Tell them, give them one.
Put their situation aside. Put their differences aside. You see, this even goes for the people that are married. Sometimes, one thing about love and one thing about being in a relationship, you can't hold grudges and you can't hold all these certain little tweaks and twerks. Sometimes you got to let it go. Me and my wife been together 36 years. And you look at my wife look every bit of 32. And she already, she, I ain't going to tell you how old she is, but she look every bit of 32.
Oh, you just.
She do.
You just sending it out there. You
she ain't listening. She do. And she's a hot tamale, I'll tell you. But look here. If we put our differences aside, because me and my wife, we have a, she's a good cop, I'm the bad cop.
Oh, so you
I'm the enforcer.
Somebody has to play the good cop.
Somebody, you have to be balanced.
Even if you're not.
Yeah, because my wife, she's like the angel that comes in. Oh, it'll be all right. And I'm the one. I'll pin them to the wall. I'm that one. And so we meet together and we make it work. We make it work. No. You see, they know that if mom fails, they're going to get the consequences. And that's just real.
Well, I must say, you know, we're down. We are pretty much down. So we should have scheduled the show for a little bit longer.
That's all right. I'll come back and we'll just do another show. We'll do another show, you know. It's always a blast.
And just listen to shout out there, too. I'm going to let you go ahead and send a shout out, say your goodbye.
I just like to send a shout out to all the people. You know what? Spread the word about this show, because the more ears that need to hear, they need to hear this, so we can heal a lot of families and we can get a bunch of kids saved.
A bunch of kids
that are going through it because of their parents, you know, their parents going through feuds and fighting and then running off and just being young and dumb. So, you know, if you spread this so we could spread the word to other kids so that they might have an idea of what to do, or other people, so they might have an idea of what to do, you know. It's really sad that communication is all we need. Communication is the best. You know, every race has communication.
There we go. We can't take it out with that one now. And communication is best. That's why we're here.
I just said every race has communication.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for being in the house studio. And
oh, my pleasure. And I love, you know, I love talking and I love helping people. And just remember, don't forget prayer.
prayer is something that you can't overcome.
Yes.
Pray for your children, mothers, put your hands on their head. And pray for the father that he get his gear together and the mothers get their gear together and then
everybody
just pray for the ones
together.
That are going through trouble.
Work together
and just by the faith in you, maybe you'll pull it and they'll come back and do what they're supposed to do. I love you guys. Thank you. Now.
Thank you, Bishop Brett. We're gonna go ahead and take it out. That's my big brother. He's just back fresh too. He hasn't been doing shows with me, so we have to. I don't think he's ever done a show in house with me. So he saw my thing, but now he's seeing how I'm working my thing. He's loving it, and I'm loving you guys. And I love the support that you guys bring. I'm sending this shout out to Freestyle Friday night. Won't be too many of these freestyle birthday celebrations after We're going to keep it on the serious tip, but this was a big, touchy kind of conversation, and we're going to take it into a further combo, let's say in the future, hopefully in the next week or two. I just want to thank you guys for being out. Much love to all of you guys on Facebook, Twitter, all of my friends and family out there on Google+, all of my family. I love you much. And this is Gina's Groove Theory broadcasting here out of Long Beach, California. Like you know, it's your Freestyle Friday. And I'm going to take it out with what's going to be my new intro. I got his representation. He told me it was okay. I can do it. Here is Unniggering a Nation by Derrick D. Brown and his girl Nita out there in Atlanta, Georgia. Sending a shout out there to them for being there for me. Put it in. Here you go. 2 and 2. Gina's Groove Theory. Talk to you later.
This is the beginning of a process where we are unniggering ourselves. The foundation of where we will no longer be looked upon as just figures or statistics that can be marketed as a fad or never but ever changing trend. Those that categorize us as such will begin to witness the becoming of black people. The process where we are unniggering ourselves. And with it, away goes ignorance to have diligence. It is just instead of wanting to take away from others when there's so much more to have and earning. Well, we start to pay attention to the little details that's within the big picture that's inside of a photo album where everybody has at least one picture. Unniggering ourselves means that even if you are behind my back, I'm still not gonna harm you, cause you only harming yourself. Unniggering ourselves means that they ain't worried about just me, but all of us, cause we banding together, so we can get out together. Unclassifying ourselves as more than just a useful prophet to the prophets. That's keeping us against each other anyway, cause I hate you or what you wear or where you live or what you drive or who your folks is or where you go to school at and this and that and that and this and that was this before that became this. And when that hit this, we all got that this is a bad situation that happened to this. Cause now that got this in jail while this, that, and those are dead as hell. This process of unniggerization means that if we have enough of the nation's population having better communications on prospering with better situations while still relating to our setbacks, our trials, and our tribulations, then a nigger in the mind frame means that we maintain on teaching each child the training of home, community, and life. And as every race studies us, we need to study them and study us. So as we unnigger ourselves, we'll have a sturdy us. Seeming to how they want to beat us, so nigger rush, but just don't seem to have that nigger touch. So say if we take notes and put that nigger touch to it, then a nigger in ourselves will really do away with our niggerish ways of how we see and treat each other and ourselves in a negative way. Hey, follow my Twitter signs out there of a nigger in ourselves. Let's see how far this can go. Look at it like this. We help build, they should. So let's build ours. A nigger in ourselves means to agree, to disagree, and still get it done. And it's on to the next one. Cause it's so much more that we can do much better. The unniggering process means that I'm not worried about your chuck, but what has got you fed up? Be that ill when you wanna fess up, that end of the rope when you wanna catch up. Cause mountaintops is where we head up. But see, here's the question. If we a nigga ourselves, who can stop us?